Any other questions, comments, concerns before we jump into lecture material? Okay, if not, we'll move on. So on Monday, we were moving into kind of a generalized analysis of switching converters. And we talked about these different nonlinearities, different ways to address them, nonlinearities that make the analysis of switching converters difficult. And in order to develop this method, we kind of did a review of state-space modeling, motivated by the buck, these two different switching subintervals. And in each subinterval, what we have is a equivalent, completely linear time invariant circuit. And for those two individual LTI circuits, we have no problem writing a state space equation that describes circuit operation. In each case, it looks like x dot is equal to ax plus bu. The difficulty of the nonlinearity comes in when we start switching back and forth between these two very simple circuits. So we define this delta function, which is really just a 0 to 1 amplitude version of our gate drive signal. Defines which switching state we're in at any given time. And plugging that in, we found that we got this now time-varying state-space representation, which is not so easy to analyze, not so easy to work with. Reviewed what's the typical approach. Well, we don't like it, so we average it away. What we get is our average state space equations, and that falls out to give us equations describing circuit operation that match exactly what we've done since we became power electronics engineers, just the averaged equations of the circuit. This was steady state. We started looking into small signal by doing a perturbation of this equation and linearizing. And what we ended up with down here, the bottom, was our small signal representation for our states. And it looked like something real similar here, depending on small signal perturbations and states and small signal input perturbations. And then this extra expression down here that depended on this delta hat thing, how much I change my eventually PWM signal, my representation of switching states. And then at the end of class, we looked at what that delta hat would look like. Found that if I take delta in red and perturb it, example, by increasing the duty cycle, I get this green waveform. If I take the difference of those two, I get delta hat. And delta hat just looks like this pulse centered right at my switching edge. And if I allow this to be a true small signal representation where that perturbation is much smaller than my main signal, I kind of reduce down to where I have just this impulse function. So my delta hat is something that instantaneously at the switching edge applies some perturbation to my system and has no effect the rest of the time. Okay. I have written myself into a corner here with my notation by calling this thing delta, because Dirac impulse are normally represented by delta. So I'm going to just insert some notation here. Note, Dirac impulse, usually called delta, we'll call it impulse of T. Because I've already used delta of T for something else. Please don't be confused there now that I'm talking about impulses, but we already called delta of T. Okay, so I'm gonna look a little bit more at this for a second, and then just to get away from the slide from last time, I'm gonna redraw this. So my delta hat of T looks like this, where from 0 to TS, here at DTS, I have this impulse. Okay. And the height of this impulse, if you remember from back circuits 2 when you were working with these things, this delta has value only at a single time, this impulse function. And it has value such that if I integrate over this, the area is going to be whatever I needed to get this sort of a change. Okay. So here, that area is going to be d hat ts, however much I wanted to change d hat times ts. That's the area of this thing. Little that this is, we normally draw it as a height, really denoting what the integral over ts. If I integrate this thing over ts, it's going to spit back d hat ts. Okay. So I can write an expression for this. D hat of t is equal to this delta hat of t, excuse me, is equal to this d hat ts times my impulse function, my unit impulse, okay, which is that IMP that I defined on the previous slide. And this whole thing is periodic. I'm going to have one of these every period. So this is going to look like an infinite sum from minus infinity to plus infinity of these impulse functions, of impulse of t minus n plus d ts, where my n is going from minus infinity to plus infinity. That summation is just telling me I have one of these every switching period for all time. Okay. So the interesting thing here is this is one way that I could write an equation describing this delta hat, my small signal duty cycle perturbation. But really, with these impulse functions, because I'm zero everywhere except this single time, I could put anything out front. So some random function of t impulse, lost my t, as long as in this function f of n plus d ts is equal to d hat ts. Mean by that, draw this out down here versus t. If I have a unit impulse here, height 1, which is what I get from this impulse function, and I multiply that by any random function out here, that all gets multiplied by 0 and destroyed. All I care is that at this value, this point right here, this is d hat ts. That make sense? Telling me is I don't care what you're telling me the duty cycle should be during any part of the period except when I switch. Okay. We can look at this another way, a more, this slide is not where it's supposed to be. We can look at this in a more circuit-oriented way by looking back at our simple PWM modulator. So we get a PLM modulator, we take a sawtooth wave, V-saw, we compare it to some control signal. The output of a comparator is a PWM waveform. So delta of T here matches with what I was calling delta of T. And then here I have my sawtooth compared to a control signal. Okay. The trailing edge modulator in the past, when we were doing average models, we said, okay, here's the equivalent model of this. This is just ratio. When my control signal goes to VM, I'll get full on. When it goes to zero, I'll be full off. Linear throughout, this looks just like a gain of 1/VM. If my control signal instead was this, that crosses, has the same value at this comparison instant, but was all over the place everywhere else, I end up with the exact same output of this thing. Okay. Different way of looking at the same effect. Okay. The only thing that matters in my control signal telling this thing when to switch is the value right when it does switch. Okay. A third way of looking at this, just conceptualizing, is within one switching period, I get one choice of what to do, right? So if I think I want 50% duty cycle and I switch at 50% and then right here, I decide, oh, actually I wanted 75% duty cycle, too late, right? I've already switched. I get one switching action per period. I got to wait till the next period to change, okay? The net takeaway is that every switching converter behaves as some kind of a sampler. Every switching converter, I have one control action per period. I can sense all I want. I can have an ideal ADC that has no sampling delay. I feel feedback loop with infinite bandwidth, but I'm still going to have to take one control action per period, and I'm going to have behavior of a sampler, time delays, all these things going on in my switching converter. Okay. So what does this mean for our net behavior? We'll look back at what it is that we really do when we average. Okay. So when I'm looking at some switching circuit, look at the spectrum of it. If I'm looking at dynamic behaviors, what I have is some frequency components down here over the frequency range with which I'm trying to change the output, which I'm trying to regulate, right? So this is something down within my bandwidth. And this is what I'm trying to model with my average modeling. Okay? If I have a megahertz switching converter and I start wanting to have 100 kilohertz bandwidth, this is that 100 kilohertz frequency range and below. Okay? Here, my switching frequency and its sidebands and all these harmonics, we're trying to get rid of these by averaging. And I do this averaging expression where I average over one switching period, and that gets rid of all this stuff, right? I can look at this averaging expression in the frequency domain, taking a Fourier transform of it. What I get is a gain that looks like this for the effective transfer function of averaging. Okay. What does this look like on my x-axis here? I'm doing frequency normalized to the switching frequency that I'm averaging over. On the y-axis, the magnitude. So if I go way back here, an order of magnitude and below the switching frequency, I'm getting 0 dB, I'm getting 1, my signal just passes through, does nothing to it. As I go to the switching frequency and its harmonics, this thing drops off to minus infinity dB. So I completely kill all of those harmonics. I get essentially multiplied by zero, averaging a sinusoid over its period gives me zero. No surprises there. Over this range, I now have some attenuation of the signal as I start approaching the switching frequency. This thing is not some ideal. It's one everywhere except at the switching frequency and above, it goes to minus infinity. Got this roll off here. And if we looked at the phase will be similarly rolling off and continue rolling off out to higher frequency. And this is really the fundamental reason why when we teach you the average model, we say your bandwidth has to be a decade below your switching frequency, or if you're very careful, maybe half a decade below, because your average model is going to have this kind of phony transfer function multiplied in. Because when I take this averaging, I get this gain roll off. It's not really part of my circuit. It's something that results from the analytical technique. And it doesn't model the actual behaviors of the circuit. Those are fundamentally different. So as I get out to half, maybe a tenth of my switching frequency, my average model is no good. This effect is significant. Sampling effect that we talked about before is significant, and they're two different things. So my model is containing dynamics that aren't part of my circuit and not modeling the dynamics that are part of it. Okay. So what I want to do is look at a better way to model this. Before I hop into this, go back to this phantom slide here, my average model. So here's my traditional average model of the buck converter. I think this one wasn't in the notes that I gave as a handout. So this thing you've seen before, this we've derived a long time ago. We can do it by any number of techniques. Average switch modeling, waveform averaging, but I'm confident you guys can get to this point. Just to prove things out, I want to get here by state space averaging. So we did this for steady state behavior last class. Said, I've got this equation up here that I don't like, so I'm going to average it because that makes things better. Got here and got the steady state behaviors. If I go down to my small signal, my dynamic equation, I've got the same situation. In fact, these two terms are exactly the same thing. If I average those, that I've already done. This is my only new term. And this thing is even more offensive to me than the previous terms, because now it has this string of impulse functions. Those are weird. I don't want to mess with those. So my best approach here is going to be to just average over all of this. I'm going to do so with recognition, like we've talked about before, that this is going to be invalid over some region. The reason I'm doing this is just to make the equations tractable, understandable. Okay. So if I average over this, what I'm going to get here is going to be dA1 plus D prime A2 as before. For the buck converter, those are the same thing. I'll just have my A matrix. Here I'm going to get dB1 plus D prime B2, steady state values. That looks like 0, 1 over, or 0, and then D over L in the bottom term of that matrix. And then here, A1 and A2 are the same thing. So this term is going to drop out. B1 and B2 are different. We'll have to take that and take the steady state U, and then I need to average over this delta hat. Okay. Delta hat, we said we can represent in any of these ways, but this impulse function, the unit impulse, when I integrate it, I get back 1. So if I integrate that summation thing over a 1 period, I'll get 1 back. So my delta hat is going to be d hat, that TS will cancel with the 1 over TS for my averaging. Okay. So what I end up with, take the average of my X dot hat over 1 switching period. That's going to look like, let's write it out here, DA1 plus D prime A2 times X hat plus DB1 plus D prime B2 times U hat plus A1 minus A2 times X plus B1 minus B2 times U times average value of delta hat T over TS. That'll work out. Make sure I have my right equation. This whole thing in square brackets on the bottom is a constant value. That's part of the average, but since it's a constant, I can just pull that all out. Okay, so for my buck converter, A1 and A2 are the same thing. This goes away. This looks like A X hat plus DB1 plus D prime B2 looked like 0 D over L. Did that last class. Times U hat plus down here in the bottom, B1 minus B2 is going to look like 0, 1 over L. My U is just VG. And my delta hat is D hat once I do this averaging. There. A is, what was A? 1 over RC, 1 over C, minus 1 over L, 0. Okay. So now if I write out the two equations that come from the state space expression, it's going to look like C dV hat dt is equal to minus VC over RC plus IL hat over C, zeros all the way through. This equation is describing this capacitor voltage. It is the current here subtracted, the current here added in. That's these two terms in my small signal model. Okay. My second equation, L DIL hat by DT is equal to minus C sub C hat over L, this term, plus D over L VG hat, plus VG over L, wrote it as a capital D hat. That's describing the behavior of this inductor. That's the equation I would have gotten from my volt second balance. It is VG hat times D, which is what I get here. VC over L subtracted the voltage on this side, and then VG D hat. Let's put the L, I kept these over on the right. Those shouldn't be there. Or I could get rid of all these denominators and put them over there. But now, if I do this averaging, I get back to where I was. So just wanted to go through this motivate, even though we're looking at it in the state-based model, if I do the averaging, it's completely equivalent to doing it by waveform averaging both second balance and cap charge balance. Okay. But taking this approach, I end up with this error because I'm essentially neglecting all of this business with sampling, all this business with time-varying signals. And what I'm allowing to happen is this signal, C hat, my kind of control signal coming in, it affects the converter always. It doesn't matter if I change that, you know, just before or just after a switching edge. Now I've made this thing time invariant, and D hat has continuous effect on circuit operation. But what we showed here is that that's not true. Any variations in my control out here do nothing to my circuit. It only cares about this single instance. Okay. So if I want to take this into account, how the heck do I do it? And what we're going to do is move over to a essentially discrete time model. The approach to this, I'm going to look back generally at my state-space description of circuit operation that looks like X dot is AX plus BU. And I'm going to solve this equation for what X is at any time. Okay. So the process for doing that is most simply done in somewhat of a weird way. So I'll ask you to trust me. What I'm going to do is I'm going to multiply both sides by e to the minus at. And this thing may be strange and new to some of you because this is a matrix. So this thing is a matrix exponential. And I've got a slide in a moment here that talks about what that is, but trust me, that matrix exponentials are a real thing. Okay. But use this moment to point out, now we are going to be working with matrix algebra here. So things like the commutative property don't apply. Multiplying from the left and multiplying from the right are not the same thing. So be careful of that in this derivation. Okay, so I'm going to multiply by e to the minus at from the left to both sides of this equation. What I'll get is e to the minus at x dot is equal to e to the minus at ax plus e to the minus at du. Okay. I'm going to move this term over to the left, which is going to look like minus that is equal to that. And then I'm going to look at this thing here. So if I tell you y is equal to e to the minus at, then the derivative of y with respect to time, y dot, is going to be minus e to the minus at times a. Okay. Derivative of an exponential just gives me back the exponential, and then by chain rule, I got to take the derivative of this inner thing, which gives me minus a, right? So when I look at this thing, I put the curly brace under. This thing looks like y times x dot plus y dot times x, right? Which is equal to d by dt of yx. Right. So I can replace this whole thing with the curly brace under it by this kind of an expression. It means I'm going to get derivative with respect to time of e to the minus at x is equal to e to the minus at bu. Now I've got something that looks a lot nicer. I can integrate both sides of this to get my solution. So we'll go to the next slide here. I want to integrate both sides. We get is the integral from 0 to t of the derivative with respect to, now since I'm integrating from 0 to t, I'm going to replace all my t's inside this integral with some integrating factor. I'm going to use tau. It's going to be the partial with respect to tau of e to the minus a tau times x of tau d tau. Same thing over here, integral from 0 to t, e to the minus a tau times b times u of tau d tau. Okay, this one on the left, nice and easy. I'm taking the integral of a derivative. What I'm going to get back is value at the end of, at time t minus value at 0. So I'm going to get this is equal to e to the minus a t x of t minus e to the minus a 0, which is 1, times x of 0. That's equal to still this derivative. This thing, I don't have much luck because I've got product of two time varying things, e to the minus a tau, that's some function, I know that, but u of tau, I have no idea what it is. My input signal could be doing anything. I have no great way to take the integral of that multiplied by anything else. Okay. One thing I can do, though, is I can rewrite this expression to solve for my states at any arbitrary time t. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to multiply everything from the left by e to the at, and since this is matrix algebra, I need to explicitly say this, but e to the minus at inverse is equal to e to the at. Okay, for scalar values inherently true, for matrices that needs to be true, and in fact is. So if I multiply this whole thing by e to the at from the left, it's going to cancel here. I'm going to get e to the at terms on both of these. If I rearrange, I'll get x of t is equal to e to the at x of 0 plus e to the at integral from 0 to t, e to the minus a tau, b u of tau, d tau. And I can push this term into my integral to get x of t is equal to e to the a t x of 0 plus integral from 0 to t of e to the a t minus tau b u of tau d tau. this thing is pretty cool. And I guess Spencer was the only one sufficiently excited about it that he couldn't contain himself. This tells me what my state values are at any arbitrary time, given an initial condition and a circuit configuration that I'm propagating through. Okay. This thing looks suspiciously like a convolution integral. Remember back from doing that. This thing is telling me how my states propagate through. Okay. So, like I said, I can't do much if U of tau is time varying. But I can, in these switching converters, look at it under the assumption that U of tau is more or less constant within any period that I want to look at. Right? But telling me, if I want to look at my switching circuit over 0 to DTF, I'm going to say the input voltage is approximately constant over that time. Okay? And that tends to be true more often than not in our power converters, that our independent inputs, things like VG and load current, are more or less constant over a portion of a switching period, right? Otherwise, you're going to have big problems if VG has some significant variation faster than our switching frequency. Okay. So if U of T is approximately constant over one switching period or one switching interval, then as BU becomes constant, I can pull that out of the integral. But because I'm working in matrix algebra, I can't move it over here to the front. It stays over on the right. And then I can evaluate this integral. I know how to take the integral of an exponential. It looks a little bit different when they are matrices. But what I'm going to get is x of t, the e to the a t, x of 0, plus a inverse, e to the a t minus I, b q. Here's a cool thing. My inputs are constant, and I'm in my buck converter. If I know my initial states, I know my A and B matrices, and I know some time, for example, DTS, the total time in switching subinterval 1, I can immediately tell you what the states are at the end of that subinterval. Okay. Then those states are an initial condition for my subinterval 2, and I can immediately tell you the states at the end of that subinterval. So just with this one closed form expression, I can tell you exactly how the converter operates. Okay. So if I want to apply this to a switching converter, let me first talk about this matrix exponential. Has anybody worked with a matrix exponential before? One. Everybody else hasn't seen it? One and a hesitant one? Okay. So, e to the at, where this is a matrix, it has a definition similar to my scalar exponential, where this is equal to a Taylor series from k is equal to 0 to infinity of at to the k over k factorial. The one of the main differences is that the convergence of this summation is not necessarily uniform. And that's what I'm showing in this plot from a reference down here. Neglecting kind of what their math is, here's my error versus number of terms in the Taylor series. So this Taylor series looks like I plus AT plus AT squared over 2, so on. And one thing that I really like to do with my small signal model is take it and linearize these more difficult expressions, right? So I'd like to express this as just I plus AT. But under certain conditions, as I include a small number of terms, for example, just the first 2, my error gets worse than if I just said, I think probably equal to 1. Okay? And it can take hundreds or thousands of terms before this thing starts to converge. It will always converge to the correct value. This is the formal definition of what the matrix exponential is. But I may need to expand this out to many terms to get an accurate value for that. Okay. The reason I bring this up is, you know, we are doing all this perturb and linearize, all this Taylor series expansion of first order. There are cases where that's going to be a very bad approximation for the behavior of the circuit. Okay. Because it may be that expanding to first order is giving me an equivalent to this matrix exponential that is less accurate than just replacing it with 1. Okay. Working with these in MATLAB, EXPM of A gives you the matrix exponential. Use that. Unfortunately, EXP of A will evaluate, will give you back a matrix, but this is the element wise. Exponential. So it takes your matrix and it goes through and does e to the a 1 1, e to the a 1 2, e to the a 2 1. That. So it just does the exponential of every individual value. So if you use this, you'll think you're getting the matrix exponential and you'll spend a month figuring out why your small signal models aren't matching up to your DAB, and you won't get your thesis ready and be frustrated. And then finally you'll figure it out and you'll get your thesis from the University of Colorado. That's I've got one data point on that, but why they define that, who knows? Okay. So we've done all this. Okay, we solved a phase-based model. We're annoyed because this is more math than we wanted to do, but now we can apply it to actual switching converters. Okay. And we'll get through this next time, but I want to leave you with a thought. So if I look over one switching period in time, I start with some initial condition, and then over a time DTS, I have my equivalent circuit 1, and then over time, the prime TS, to my end here at TS, I have circuit 2. So if I start from some initial state, I can use what we just derived to figure out what the states are after propagating through circuit 1 for DTS. Then I can use those states as an initial condition, figure out what I get when I propagate through D prime TS in my equivalent circuit 2. Now I've solved how my states propagate through the system. And the cool thing about it is, A, this equation is derived only from state-space equations. So it applies to every single circuit topology out there. That is some switching circuit where in each subinterval I can write a linear equivalent circuit. Okay. The other cool thing is I've made one approximation, which is that my inputs are slowly varying. I haven't linearized anything. I haven't averaged anything. All of my resonant behaviors are still in there. All of my dynamics are still in there. I'm getting a complete description of the circuit as long as my independent inputs aren't varying too quickly. Could be nice, could be helpful. Okay, we'll pick up there on Monday, and we'll go back and pick up tiny box materials now.